The Sea Speaks. Your father was one of the very few to leave Troy and go straight home without encountering disaster, said Menelaus, nodding to Pisistratus. A lesson there, perhaps? Ever wise, Nestor did not linger to fill his ships with treasure and slaves, as the others did, as I did. As your father did too, I'm afraid, Telemachus. Diomedes was the other exception. He swiftly made his way back to Argos, safe and sound. Oh, and then there was Idomeneus. How unlucky he was. Left early, but on his way back to Crete, met with a beast of a storm. A story goes that he knelt on the deck and prayed to Poseidon, promised him that if he and his ships were spared, he would sacrifice to the god the first living thing he saw when he made landfall on Crete. And what was the first living thing he saw? His own son. But as for the rest of us, the very day after Nestor and Diomedes weighed anchor and slipped away, our troubles began. You know what happened to Locrian Ajax, I suppose. Poseidon destroyed him. Wretched fool, deserved no less. But we were all caught up in the worst storms any of us had ever seen. The Ithacan fleet, too, all of us, all tossed about like leaves in the wind. Our Spartan fleet found ourselves in Egypt, of all places. I shan't go into all the details of the next 7 years. We were unlucky in one way because circumstance, pirates, betrayal and opportunity kept us from Sparta and home all that time. But we were lucky in that, well, we survived. And by heaven, we gathered some treasure as we went. Damn near sank our ships. We were so loaded with gold and... Yes, yes, all in all, the gods were mostly kind. A cough from Helen. Yes, yes, my dear, I'm coming to it. Well, after 7 years shuttling around the seas, we found ourselves back in Egypt on a small island just west of the Nile's great delta. Pharos, it's called. Known for the construction upon it in around 280 BC of a great lighthouse, one of the original Seven Wonders of the World. It gives its name to the French for lighthouse, phare, or faro in Spanish and Italian. Couldn't get off the wretched place. I'd not made the right sacrifices to the gods or something of that kind. My useless seers had no idea what we were supposed to do to escape this hell. Been marooned for 20 days... running out of food and fresh water, approaching starvation, when one evening I went for a walk on the shoreline, scavenging for any dead fish that might have been beached up there. That's what we were reduced to. And suddenly I was aware of this girl coming towards me. Shimmering, she was. I realized at once she must be some kind of immortal. No one lived on Pharos, and if they did, they wouldn't have looked so astonishingly, so astoundingly. Another cough from Helen. So astonishingly healthy, extraordinarily well, she looked. Anyway, as she approached, she frowned, as if she was angry with me. Hey there, stranger. What are you, a fool or a madman? No one but an imbecile would stay here for more than an afternoon. You have been here for almost a whole moon.
With all respect, lady, we've had no choice. I must have offended some god somehow. We've tried and tried to leave, but something happens to stop us every time. I can see that you are immortal. Your beauty tells me that. Which is to say, your healthy glow tells me that. But perhaps you can advise us.
Your best hope is to ask my father, Proteus, the one they call the Old Man of the Sea. There is nothing he does not know.
He's here, on Pharos.
Neptune's largest moon is Proteus. Its largest impact crater has been given the name Pharos. Astronomers know their Greek myths. He comes here every day. You see that cave? At noon, he comes in from the sea to rest there. Hundreds of seals come up with him and surround him as he sleeps. So what you need to do is choose three of your strongest and ablest men and hide with them in the cave early in the morning. Once he has come in and fallen asleep, you'll have to make a rush at him and hold him tight, really tight. He's slippery and strong, and he's always angry. Whatever you do, don't let him go. It'll take the four of you. Not just because he's so strong and slippery, but because he can change his shape. Hence our word protean. Into any animal and anything. So you'll really need to keep your wits about you. If you hold him fast for long enough, he'll relent and tell you what you want to know. How to get off the island. But he can tell you more than that. Ask him anything.
Thank you. Thank you, goddess. What is your name? How should I remember you in my prayers and sacrifices?
Eidothea is my name. Friends call me Eido.
May I ask why you show such kindness to a poor stranger?
Maybe it's because I like it when my father is bested. Or maybe it's because your red hair amuses me.
And then she dived into the waves. That's the immortals for you.
You never quite know, do you?
Well, we had a small supper of clams, sea urchins, and strange squashy marine creatures that have no name, and frankly don't deserve one. Next morning, at dawn, we prayed to all the gods we could think of and made our way towards the cave that Eido had pointed out to me. As we arrived there, she came out from the sea carrying with her the skins of four seals. Inside the cave, we dug out four hollows to lie in, and she covered each one of us with one of the skins and went away. Hell of a wait. The smell. The revolting, rotten, fishy stink would have been too much for us if Eido hadn't spread a tiny smear of ambrosia under our nostrils. Its divine sweetness more or less counteracted the horrific stench. All through the morning we could hear and feel hundreds of seals sliding their way across the sands towards us. Into the cave they came, honking, snorting, and slobbering as they settled down to their rumbling sleep. Then, from under our pelts, I could hear the old man humming to himself. Next came the sound of him counting the seals. Eido would warn me he did this every day. But when he discovers that there are four more than there should be, I had asked her.
Oh, the numbers always vary. He has to report the tally to Poseidon every night. I think it's the god's way of keeping my father under his thumb.
At last the count was over, and the sound of Proteus snoring now mingled with the rasping splutter of the seals. I whispered to my companions, as planned. 1, 2, 3. Now! We pushed off the skins under which we'd been suffocating for so long, staggered to our feet, kicked aside the sleek, slimy, sleeping seals in our way, and fell on Proteus. Seizing a limb each, we pulled him out of the cave so quickly that he was still coming to by the time we were on the beach. Now we crammed ourselves around him, hugging him tight. The blazing heat and light of the fierce midday sun shocked us all, but him most of all. Once he realized what was happening, he roared in rage. But what that roar became! Suddenly, we found ourselves clutching a lion! A snarling, roaring lion! Keep fast, boys! Keep fast! I managed to gasp out. Next, it was a great writhing serpent we were clinging on to, then a leopard, a huge tusked boar, a tree. But we never relaxed our grip, not for a second. These transformations must have been tiring, because we could feel the resistance slowly weakening. At last, with a groan and a wheeze, Proteus returned to his original shape. He glared at me through clouded, fishy eyes.
"Oh, it's you, is it? The son of Atreus. Why have you seized me against my will? How dare you?"
Agamemnon and Menelaus were the Atreides, the sons of Atreus, members of that cursed house that stretched all the way back through Pelops to Tantalus. Something about the name Atreus appeals to science fiction and fantasy writers. House Atreides is a royal dynasty in Frank Herbert's Dune. Atreus is a God of War video game character, and Atreyu features in The Neverending Story. I'm sure there are more peppered about the Star Trek and other universes.
"We have you, old man, and we will let you go when you've answered my questions. They're very simple for a deity who knows all there is to know. For one thing, you'll be aware of how long we have been marooned here and how hard we've tried to leave. So tell us, which god is keeping us here? How have we offended them? How do we placate them? There, it can't be too difficult for the wise, all-knowing Proteus, surely."
"Ha! That's simple enough for you to have worked it out yourself. The fact is, you were so busy looting and ransacking Troy that you forgot to make the proper sacrifices to Zeus and the other gods before you left for home. And since then, to make matters worse, you've enriched yourselves beyond the needs of any man, again, all without proper thanks and votive offerings to the gods. You have been trying to sail north and west. You must point your ships the other way, towards Egypt, and sail up through the Nile. Burn sacrifices as you go. Pray. Build a few altars. Do your duty by the Olympians, and only then will you be able to sail back to Sparta."
Now you can imagine what a fool I felt. He was right. Of course he was right. I should have known. Yes, I had thanked the gods by word and the occasional prayer, but I'd forgotten how much they need real prayer, the real smoke of real burnt meat and the real praise songs, real worship. But before I let Proteus go, there was more I had to know. "My fellow Achaeans, my brothers in arms, have they all got safely home?" "All but three," he told me. First he described the death of Locrian Ajax. It was hard to sympathize. What was he thinking, to have defied the gods in such a way? The war must have turned him mad. But then Proteus told me about my brother's fate. I wept like a child at the news. I cried out that I wanted to die. If I couldn't avenge Agamemnon, life would mean nothing. But he gave me that fish-eyed stare again.
"It's not for you to make such drama. Maybe you will get to kill Aegisthus, or maybe your nephew Orestes has already done so."
This calmed me down a bit. You've been gracious, old man. Forgive the force with which we held you. We shall do all you have said."
"Wait! Did I not say that there were three of your comrades who had failed to find home? Your particular friend, Laertes' son, is the third."
"Odysseus! Don't tell me he too has perished."
"He is trapped on the island of Ogygia, a prisoner of the nymph Calypso, who is mad for love of him. He dreams of Ithaca, Penelope, and his son Telemachus. But he has lost his crew, his ships, and any means of finding home. For years he has been trapped there. Who knows if he shall ever leave?"
Menelaus broke off. Telemachus had gone white in the face and was trembling. Menelaus thought it tactful to carry on for a while, and give him a chance to recover.
Well, he went on a bit, prophesying my fate. All nonsense, I'm sure.
For all that you are slow to sacrifice to the gods, they like you, he said. Some such rot. Indeed, they do. After all, you are a son-in-law of Zeus himself.
There was more like that. I shan't bother to repeat it.
In fact, Proteus told Menelaus his fate, immortality in Elysium.
And then, my skin and scales were not made for this burning sun. You have had from me what you wanted. Farewell, son of Atreus.
Before we knew it, Proteus had slipped and slid across the sand and into the surf, and we were left alone on the beach, being stared at disapprovingly by a great circle of seals. As for the rest, well, following those instructions, we pointed our ships towards Father Nilus, and all was fine after that. I built a memorial to my brother Agamemnon. We stopped to burn sacrifices to Zeus and the other 11 Olympians, not to mention 100 different local gods. And finally, we turned about, sailed out to sea, and picked up a fair wind to Sparta.
Helen had taken Telemachus's hand. It's good news. Good news. The old man of the sea is many things.
Literally many things. A lion, a snake, a...
Menelaus, you're not helping. Many things, but not a liar. Your father is alive.